Good evening, brothers and sisters in the Dharma. Good evening, Brother Teo. And Sadhu, thank you for coming down here to share with us your Dharma knowledge again, Brother Teo. Before I carry on further, just an announcement for those who had not been here a few days ago. Now, this is pertaining to Tiratana activities. For this coming Chinese New Year, as usual in the past, Reverend Sada is available for devotees to invite him for a Chinese New Year house blessing or for dana purposes, right? If you have not already booked Reverend Sada and would like to invite him to your house, please inform Sister Fu so that the time slot can be allotted for you. And the other one is that for this coming Sunday, the four Buddhist societies in Klang are co-organizing this Metta Circle, the chanting and reciting of Metta. This is on a quarterly basis. And so this coming Sunday, 15th of January, will be hosted by KCBA, Klang Coast Buddhist Association. Now, it starts at 9:30 in the morning together at KCBA premises. And if you are interested, kindly inform Sister Fu also or Brother KC Lee of this Maha Satipatthana Buddhist Society. All right? So so that you... Brother Michael Tay, not KC Lee of Maha Satipatthana Society. Brother Michael Tay, so that arrangement can be made for the refreshments and food. All right, that is this Sunday, 15th of January. And the third one is that the Maha Satipatthana Society is organizing a workshop known as GLAD, G-L-A-D workshop, to be conducted by Brother Tan Huat Chai. Brother Tan Huat Chai is a personnel training for, like say, the corporate sectors and all those motivation talks. So it seems that this is a very good workshop he had conducted before. And Brother KC Lee of this Maha Satipatthana Society is giving preference to Tiratana and the other society that is associated before he opened it up to the other people. So if any of you would like to participate in this, please inform Brother KC Lee or Sister Fu so that a place may be reserved for you. All right? And tonight's talk, The Meaning and Importance of Enlightenment, I think that we all know, in all other religions, they may say that to be with union with their respective creator. And that is what truth is all about. But to us Buddhists, from the Dharma that we learn, that truth is something that has to be experienced and not to be, but cannot be conferred. So this word enlightenment, in the English word, it has several different levels of meaning. But to the Buddhists, those who pursue the Dharma more, in depth, the meaning is quite different. And therefore, that the what actually is enlightenment is beyond all our concepts. And I think that I'll leave this to Brother Teo to explain and elaborate on it. Okay? So thank you very much for listening to this brief introduction. And as usual, let us take refuge and observe the precepts. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kame sumichachara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatthana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So once again, we are meeting up for this monthly Dhamma sharing. The volume a bit high. Okay, good. Thank you. The next topic is a bit unique. Understanding the meaning and importance of enlightenment in this samsaric journey. The topic was chosen by Brother Gan. So when I saw it, I reflected on it. I say, should be a good topic, because when you understand this particular topic, it can motivate you to cultivate. It can let you see the importance of this enlightenment that the Buddha meant. Without this understanding of life, awakening, or enlightenment, living beings suffer tremendously. And this samsaric journey is not easy to endure when you don't have this understanding, this awakening. So like I wrote on the whiteboard, the title, I use another ink, the blue color one, to circle the three very important words. First is the meaning of enlightenment. Then the second one is seize the importance of having this understanding or awakening, so that you can go through this samsaric journey with understanding, with ease and joy. Otherwise, it will be too difficult to endure that type of samsaric life where you are constantly deluded, heedless, having to pay back your coming debt, all of your karmic negativity that led to karmic downfall. You have to endure them, confront them, then go through whatever that karmic friction brings about. So to live a life of heedlessness without this awakening or Dhamma understanding, or the wisdom born of the enlightenment, life can be pretty difficult, miserable, and it will lead to tremendous suffering and misery. That living being that is continuously born to die and to be born again. This is what samsara is all about. The continuous, endless birth and death that you have to go through or confront is not easy to endure or to experience when you don't have this particular awakening or enlightenment. So tonight's topic, I hope it will interest you. Then at least you must have some form of understanding. What is this teaching that the Buddha is trying to teach us? And what does he mean by enlightenment? That's like the first part of the title, understanding the meaning. Yeah? This is very important. The meaning of enlightenment. So what is it like to be enlightened? Anybody want to try? What is your idea or your perceived idea of enlightenment? To be enlightened means what? Is there anybody who is really enlightened? Anybody want to give it a try? Yeah? Awaken is a very, what they call, no, it means it doesn't tell me anything. To be enlightened is to be awakened, yes. But what is this awakening all about? Who gets awakened? And what is it? What is this awakening? This is a characteristic again. The characteristics of enlightenment is you will be free from suffering, which is very good. What else, based on your present understanding, can point towards the meaning of enlightenment? Yeah, this is very important. If you cannot understand this, you meditate without a clear understanding of what this thing is. Very good. Have this ability to insight or to awaken to the three universal characteristics of nature. So let us write it down. Eh? So characteristics of enlightenment. Characteristics of enlightenment. Enlightenment. First one just now, of course. Brother can say one. To be enlightened is to be awakened. So again, didn't explain much. Use another word, okay? At least the second one is not bad. Yeah? Once you are enlightened, you will be free from all suffering. Free from or suffering, or misery, unhappiness, and all those things. Suffering, misery, or any form of unhappiness. Second one is, just now you all mentioned, what is it? To be able to insight into the three characteristics of nature. or nature. And what are the three characteristics? Which are impermanence, impermanent suffering state, and non-self or empty nature. Non-self or empty nature or existence. Okay, what else? What else that is linked to enlightenment? What are the characteristics of enlightenment? Of course, no wrong view. Means there is wisdom. No more wrong view. Or ignorant or delusion. Which means you have realized the wisdom. Realize the wisdom leading to enlightenment. So basically, all these are characteristics of enlightenment. But very few people can talk about the actual transformation of enlightenment. What is it like to be enlightened? What actually happens when a being is enlightened? Have you learned any of this before? You heard of this characteristic. These are all in the teaching. But what is it like to really become enlightened? What are the transformation involved? What actually happened? And what is that being all about? And who is enlightened? Is there anybody inside there who is enlightened? This one, you cannot find in the book. Nobody can tell you unless that being has gone through, had realized, and had gone through the transformation. So that part is very difficult for most people to understand. Even to understand is already so difficult. And it's because very few people has developed the ability to awaken. And enlightenment, like what the Buddha mentioned in the sutta, there are also the initial enlightenment. When you go through the sainthood way, first stage of sainthood, second stage of sainthood, third stage of sainthood, these are also enlightenment. But not until you hit arahantship and beyond, it's not complete enlightenment. Complete enlightenment means fully without delusion, fully without ignorance. And the criteria is no more rebirth consciousness due to wrong view, due to self-delusion, due to ignorance, to condition rebirth consciousness. Means you don't have to come back to samsara. But there are beings who, after they have developed the enlightenment, they choose to come. You understand that part, huh? They choose to come. Means they can come back because they have this understanding. There is no more delusion, no more ignorance. So at the moment of death, they realize parinibbana. There is no delusion or ignorance to condition rebirth consciousness, because nothing dies. And that wisdom which is connected, understand. So that type of being can still come, but they are born out of pure mind, through their vows, through their understanding. So that part, you need to develop further understanding. Otherwise, there is no being in this world. Or you can hardly find a being in this world that can explain to you about all this enlightenment thing. But because there are such beings as the bodhisattvas, who already beyond enlightenment, chooses to walk this path, to cultivate this great journey, to realize full perfection of wisdom. Samasambhavahood means to become a fully enlightened being, like Sakyamuni Buddha. And because of that, there's a lot of great beings, bodhisattvas. They take various forms when they come. Some take the human form. And they can be lay people. They can be even very famous king or monarch or whatever. And sometimes they can come as the Sangha member, or you call monks and all those things. So all these are the various possibilities. So after understanding the characteristics of enlightenment, we need to go into the detail of enlightenment. What is really enlightenment? First question is, who is enlightened? Is there a being who is enlightened? Who is enlightened? What's your understanding? Let's say you are this form in mind, huh? Or so-called human being. Yeah? You say you, this human being, go and meditate or cultivate. Then, when the conditions are fulfilled, this human being become enlightened. The question is, what happened? And is this being that is enlightened really you? Your enlightenment means you penetrate what? You penetrate what? You awaken to the three characteristics of nature. And what are these three characteristics? You not only understand that these are universal characteristics common to all phenomena, all of nature's phenomena, whether physical, mental, or nature's phenomena. They exhibit this characteristic. They are all impermanent. Why are they impermanent? Because they are condition arising, causal phenomena, dependent originating. There is no God behind. There is no permanent unchanging entity behind. No such thing. Within the conditioned world, the existential world, everything is dependent originating, condition arising. That's why we have a set of laws we call nature's law. When you understand all of laws that governs life and existence, you understand life. And when you understand life, you can cultivate to realize that truth, then you awaken to all these characteristics of nature, which is the impermanent, suffering state and non-self. Then they say, you become enlightened. You awaken. Means these three universal characteristics is very important. What is a phenomena? Our physical body and our consciousness, the mind, is also a phenomenon. But this phenomenon lasts longer. That's why you are deluded and deceived by it. You think it's real. You think it's you. That's where you cannot penetrate. Before you awaken, you will believe this is you, where this is so real. And when you are born into this world, the first thing they do is to give you a name. You are so conditioned. Then they even give you an identity card to identify who you are. Then they call you by that name. Then as you grew up, you are being told, these are your parents, these are your brothers and sisters, this is your neighbor, your friend, your teacher, your colleague, and all those things. So we are so conditioned through the education system, through our civilization's norm, to believe that each and every individual is real, and we are all different. That's why we carry different identity cards, different name. Then we identify with the external form, the physical form. We call ourselves by various races, Chinese, Indian, Malays, European, and all those things. Then through the physical form, we identify again, male, female, young, and old. So all this identifying with the external form, the external phenomenal world, is what thought is doing. This is where delusion starts. But when you meditate, develop the understanding, and when you awaken, then you realize all these are not real. Oh, this one wrong spelling. Impermanent. Yeah? No. Impermanent. M. Yeah? I think I didn't finish the spelling. Impermanent. That's why the word doesn't look right. Okay. Impermanent means what? To the Buddha, it's very simple. Because it's dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. It was never there before the causes and condition arise, before the supporting causes and condition arise. When the supporting condition and causes continue to sustain itself, then the entity continue to exist. But when condition cease to be, it cease to be. Like my voice. Is it real? How did it arise? When I speak through this microphone, because of the vibration, the amplifier, you have your ear, you have a mind. Upon contact, hearing consciousness arise. That's why dependent on all these conditions that I set for together with the microphone and the loudspeaker. Then through your hearing consciousness, you perceive it, arise already. Then what do you say? Exists, real. True or not? Yeah? Can agree at this point? Yeah. Very easy to understand it. In like that also cannot understand, it's very difficult to teach you. The moment I stop speaking, what happened? Just now those sounds that I create, what happened to it? Not to say no more contact. We are conditioned for it to arise no more. Understand? If I continue to speak, you continue to hear. That hearing consciousness is there, true or not? Then you say, exist, rise already. But the moment I stop, means I don't introduce condition, you cannot hear. Even you have a mind to make contact. Where the hearing consciousness cannot arise, where there's no condition for you to receive the vibration, and for your brain to process it. Now you can see. As long as I continue to introduce this condition, means as long as the supporting condition is there, then it continues to exist. Your human body is the same. Every phenomenon in this world is the same. the supporting condition that sustain that form of mind, that sustain the movement of the fan, that sustain the vibration that I share through the Dhamma sharing. So these are all the supporting conditions. Like seeing consciousness, you need to have an organ, the eye, UIE, that is functioning. You need to have light. Then you need to have this sense data with the light able to come into contact with your eye, and the mind must be there, consciousness, to make contact. Then seeing consciousness come to be. That's why it's dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, not real. The moment you're off the light, that type of seeing consciousness is no more there. But the essence of seeing from the nature is always there. That one cannot disappear. That is the essence of mind. The essence of mind is independent of condition. That's why that one is the eternal life, the unconditioned, unborn. That one never dies. But that one is not you. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can call, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. No such thing. So these three universal characteristic understanding is very important. If condition arise, then only the phenomena arise. And when condition continue to exist, then the phenomena continue to sustain itself. Then you call it exist, real. But when condition cease to be, it's gone. But my voice, when I stop speaking and no more, you never say this voice die. But the form of mind, you say die. Condition no more, gone, die. But how come that voice, that phenomena that disappear when condition cease to be, you didn't say die? Because we are so deceived by the phenomenal world. Our conditioned mind cannot understand all these things. That's why before you awaken, before you enlightened, you are deluded. You believe this is real, the form of mind is you. That's why the Buddha called it self-delusion. So this self-delusion is very powerful. Then you are deceived by the phenomenal world where you cannot understand its universal characteristics or impermanent. You think it's real, ever existing, like this form of mind. Then you attach, you cling. That's why you have so much problem. And the Buddha has summarized all of suffering as attachment to the five aggregate of form of mind, which he called the Upadana Gandhas, the five grasping aggregate. Is dukkha or suffering. Then because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why you cannot hold, you cannot grasp, you cannot cling, and you cannot say this is me, this is I. Therefore all this can be mine. No such thing. So when you come to realize this, then you understand. Thing is just the way it is, following a set of nature's law. They call it the law of nature. And the most powerful is law of karma. Of course, there are physical law, scientific law, like the physical law of nature, Uttu Niyama, Bija Niyama, the biological order of nature, which is scientific law. Then you have the order of mind, mental law, which involves the spiritual side mainly. That's why we have Chitta Niyama. Then the mind that arises can make mental intention. Through mental intention, we create action, speech, thought process. That's how we have the moral causation. We call it the law of karma. Law of karma, moral causation. It involves mental intention. That's why the Buddha make it very clear. It's chittena that I call karma, the Buddha said. Chittena is mental intention. Without mental intention, there is no karma because it's a moral causation. Then the third aspect of the spiritual law is the law of Dhamma, Dhamma Niyama, all of truth, essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach, like the Four Noble Truths and all those things, they are part of Dhamma. And all of the essential Dhamma, they spin off from the Four Noble Truths. That's why Dhamma Niyama, the most powerful, is the Four Noble Truths. Then Chitta Niyama, order of mind, the most powerful is the law of dependent origination, dwelling, or Paticca Samuppada. And the Buddha taught them all. That's why he said, when you can understand that all of phenomena, they have this universal characteristics or impermanent, because within the existential world, everything is condition arising, cause of phenomena, dependent originating. Without condition, nothing arises. So things that flow based on condition, it can never be a permanent, unchanging entity. You know why or not? Because it is in a state of flux. You know what is flux? FL. You know this word or not? FLUX. Flux. Continuously changing. Continuously evolving. Even your body is the same. Your thought process is the same. Whatever that you see in nature is the same. The plants, the tree, your car. That's why they have this, what they call universal characteristics of impermanent. And to see impermanent, you will see decay. That process of change. So when it's in a state of flux, continuously changing and evolving, how can it remain the same? That's why it's not a, because of this, it's not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why there is no such thing as a soul. And this is the most important, most powerful teaching. That's why we have to come back to this. So if everything is in a state of flux, or flux, or continuously changing, then you will come to know that it's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can call, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. That's why this one is non-self, not you. This one, when it has the realization, when the form and mind cultivate, this is a fire aggregate of form and mind. You have to use this, because this is the only tool and vehicle for you to come to this world. And this is the one you use to cultivate. And this one can develop the enlightenment or the awakening, because it is only through this vehicle, this form and mind, that you can connect back to your nature and realize your true nature and awaken. It's only that nature which is the silent mind or the meditative mind that can awaken an insight into phenomena to realize all this. But you have to understand that this is not a permanent unchanging entity we have gone through before. This one has two parts, the physical body and the consciousness. And like I say, it's condition arising. What are the conditions behind its arising? Yeah? Thursday class we have gone through. What are the conditions behind its arising? Yeah? What are the three conditions for you to animate into a human being? For it to support and sustain your existence. If these three conditions continuous there, you will continue to live. And this so-called human being will exist. What are the three? Karmic force. So the first one is, there must be a karmic force to pump this heart. Or they call it the life force, yeah? Karmic or life force. So this one, when it pumps, it sends the blood round. It nourishes the organ. Then the second condition is the physical body, the organ. You must have a functioning body. Functioning. Physical body. If any of this part within the physical body that is vital for survival is gone, this whole phenomena, which is the human being, they will cease to be. Vital part means what? When your liver fails, when your heart fails, when your brain get damaged, when the spinal cord is gone. That's why immediately this physical body, they cannot perform its function. Which means the consciousness, the third one is the consciousness. Yeah? Third one is this consciousness. There must be consciousness. So this consciousness must be there. But when the physical body breaks down, the consciousness will have to leave. Because it cannot support it anymore. Then die. The other way is when the karmic force no more, the life force no more, you call it destructive karma. When destructive karma hit, what happened? Yeah? No more karmic force, isn't it? Yeah, it destroyed that karmic force. So, no more karmic force, the heart cannot pump. What happened? The organ always start to fail. Because when the heart doesn't pump, there is no heartbeat, there is no blood circulation, there is no nourishment. Then when that happened, there is no pulse of life. You cannot breathe. There is no prana, no fresh air, nothing. That's why your heart stops. Your pulse stops. Your breathing also stops. Then, this form and mind disperse. That's why they say you die. So, these are the conditions that supported the existence of this so-called, I use another color. Huh? So this tree, I color it in red. These are the three supportive conditions that support the existence of this form of mind, the human being. So now you understand. That's why this one is dependent originating, condition arising. When the condition continue to support, then you exist, you live. You can follow. Yeah? But when any of these cease, the form and mind die. You call die, cease. But in reality, no one die. Who die? Nothing die. Separation of consciousness from the form, because no more condition for it to exist. So the enlightened one will now will come to know that this particular human being is not real, non-self. That's why it's not them. That's why they will know there is no more delusion. They will know this one that is enlightened is not them. So that is the first thing that the enlightened one will know. But don't try to copy this understanding and tell people, then talk like you are enlightened. You cannot. No way. You don't have and still don't have. Because people can ask you a few more questions, you are gone. How is it like to be enlightened? You cannot explain anymore, apart from telling people what I tell you now. That's why a lot of people quote the Zen master, quote the Buddha, quote everywhere. But when you listen, you know there is knowledge. I given you the example last time, remember? Let's say KL, CC, we are Malaysian. Every day we can see, even on the TV, the media, everything. So let's say you haven't been there. You can talk about it, where you are from Malaysia. At one time, Twin Tower, tallest in the world. 88 story with a link bridge. There is KL Surya there. Then center of KL, Golden Triangle. You can even say next to what building. But these are all information on the map. These are all knowledge, you can pick it up. But if people ask you one more question, have you been there? You cannot answer. But if you have been there, you can answer. Yeah, I was there. How is it like? Inside there, how does it look? When you go into KL Surya, what you see? You cannot explain. What are the transport system that can take you there? You can't even tell about the LRT, how it goes into the basement and all that. You can't even tell about how the bus stops at which place outside the KLCC. What are the environment around it and all those things. If you have not been there, it means you have not been there. You cannot explain. Then the underground car park, the ramp, how you can arrive there by taxi or by what. Then inside there, when you go in, first floor, what you see, second floor, what you see. Then as you go up to the link bridge, from there, you look down, what do you see? If you haven't been there, you got no knowledge of what this thing is. You can only explain up to what you have read and heard through knowledge. That's why no point. So this spiritual understanding, the awakening, is not a knowledge. It's not rigid. It's not through memory. It's an awakening. It's an understanding. The moment you understand, no more delusion. And just now I just complete the first one, impermanent, condition arising, dependent originating. The moment you realize this characteristic, these two, suffering state and non-self or anti-nature, is automatic. You can follow. Automatic. Why is it automatic? If you have realized impermanent, means you understand that everything in this world, this universe, they are dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena, not a permanent and changing entity. It's in a state of flux, continuously evolving, changing. Then what happened? You attach and cling to the five aggregate of form and mind and want it your way, what happened? Huh? You will suffer because thing is just the way it is, following nature's law. Condition like that, things will be like that. But if you deludedly insist, this body, don't get old, don't get sick, don't die. Impossible. My loved one, don't get sick, don't get old, don't die. Always good health, long life. Beautiful form, good condition. That is your wishful thinking. The reality is, the form goes the way of nature. Each and every one of us age. As you go through life, you experience aging. You can't stop. Even when you are full of money, possession, you can be the best doctor. You can be the best beautician. Yet the reality is the reality. Understand? You can maybe put more ICI and make you better, look better. But you will never be young. Unless you know how to nourish yourself, exercise, and develop some form of maybe improvement to your physical. But sooner or later, it goes the way of nature. That is the reality. So, when you understand it's impermanent, it's going to cease. But whenever the condition ceases to be, it will cease. You cannot have things your way. That's why when you attach and cling deludedly without wisdom, you will suffer. That's why the Buddha always said, enlightenment means what? Ability to insight not only into the three characteristics of nature. Ability to see things as they are. See things as they are means what? The fourth one. sitting as they are means what? Huh? Sitting as they are. That's why in Pali, the Buddha called it Jnana Dasana, direct knowledge and vision of the reality. That's why you insight into phenomena awaken, then you realize the characteristic, then you realize thing is just the way it is. Understand? Sitting as they are means realizing truth. Realizing truth. And thing is just the way they are. They are. And this is reality. That's why when you see truth, you see reality. You no longer see delusion. Can follow? Yeah? So the purpose of meditation is to understand all this, to realize that you have to silence your mind, to have this ability to see things as they are, so that you don't see according to your memory, your conditioning, your belief system, your whatever accumulated experiences, views and opinion, conditioning, belief system, tradition, all of your tradition that mold you. So when you act according to memory, you are not acting at all, because your memory is full of your accumulation of life experiences, good and bad. You accumulate one. Yeah? All of your life experience, which include your phobia, your fear, your scars of memory. Of course, there are some happy moments. Then your craving, your desire, your lust, your happy moments in certain stages. But all these are thought, memories. Then you also accumulate all your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your belief system. And your traditional belief, being a Chinese, your Chinese tradition and all those things. Then your selfishness, your craving, your desire, your fear, your anxiety, your insecurity, your delusion. All this you accumulate in your brain. And with this you act. You are going to die. Understand, huh? Acting according to memory is not acting at all. Why? You are acting according to your fear, your wrong view, your conditioning, your insecurity, your selfishness, your craving, your desire, your stupidity and all that. And this is not action. True action is what? You must have wisdom, understanding. That's why it's the user of thought, the user of this physical body and mind, form and mind. If the user has wisdom, then this form and mind become beautiful. If this form and mind is deluded before the enlightenment or the awakening, then this form and mind is very dangerous. Because before you awaken and become enlightened, you have a lot of ignorance, a lot of self-delusion and all this wrong view, conditioning, selfishness, the evil, the insecurity. So when you act according to that, you act out your fear, your selfishness, your wrong view, your conditioning. So all this is going to cause you negativity or karma, the evil roots. That's why your karmic nature will fall. That's why when you don't have this understanding and this awakening, which comes to the second part, the importance of enlightenment, you don't have it. The user of thought is deluded. You arise all the wrong thoughts. Wrong speech, wrong action, and wrong livelihood. Then what do? You go and read up books. You go and try to be smart. You say, I need to avoid all evil. I want to do good. Then you every time try to do good. Then when you do good, the karmic still come and disturb you and make you miserable. Then you start to doubt. Do good for what? Do good also like that. Myself don't do good. But you never ask that question. Who is doing good? Good according to who? Your thought is doing good. I want to be sincere. I want to be good. I want to have merits. All these are craving, delusion, born of your views and your opinion of good. Good according to you is not nature's good. The real good, if you develop the actual understanding of the Buddha Dharma, especially those who attend the Tuesday class, the Diamond Sutta, the true good is the absence of evil is good. When you can cultivate until there is no mark of a self cultivating, no mark of living being, no mark of the phenomenal world and Dhamma, that is the real understanding. If you cannot have that understanding, you are far from the real understanding. Because when you have all this understanding, then you realize why the Buddha teach you have to avoid all evil. And then only do good. Then only you can purify your mind. Why must you avoid all evil? Avoid evil is not enough. If you can avoid all evil means what? You are incapable of evil, correct or not? True or not? When you are incapable of evil, you automatically good. Understand? This is what Krishnamurti meant by the absence of evil is good. Don't try to do good. No use. When you are deluded, that good is a conditioned good. Belief type of good according to something. Conditioning, belief system. That's why the emperor who asked Bodhidharma how much merit has he has after building all the temples, supporting all the monks and all those things, doing the translation and the cultivation, Bodhidharma says zero. Because to an enlightened being, the merit that is tainted with the egoic self is not a pure merit, you understand? It's a tainted merit. But there is a self who wants to know how much merits I have. There is a mark of somebody doing merits. Pure merit is free of greed, hatred, and delusion. Means you don't do because people tell you, oh, this is very meritorious, prompted that you do. Not to say there is no merit, there is merit, tainted merit, understand? Not the level of enlightened being. You understand? So don't be discouraged. Huh? Don't after that go and tell people, hey, Brother Teo say this is all not real merit, you know, forget about it. You get me into trouble, you get yourself into trouble. Worldly merits you have to do initially before you understand. But as you understand, it's not out of greed for the merit that you do. If you do because there is greed for that merit, like the emperor, means although he has done a lot of good thing, goodness, wholesomeness, in the worldly sense, but it's tainted by that greed for merit, understand? So there is a slight evil root there. Although that greed is not a really selfish, negative way type of greed, but it is still a type of selfishness because there is a self, the mark of a self that wants the merit. So your action is out of greed to receive those merit, even though it's very wholesome, very meritorious. So you have to understand. So the user of thought, the user of that form of mind is very important. That's why you must cultivate this enlightenment, this awakening, this wisdom to understand life, to understand the nature's law that governs life and existence, and have the ability to insight into the characteristics of nature. Then you will realize whatever that you try to hold on to, grasp on to, and cling on to, because they are impermanent, you will lead to suffering. You cannot attach. They will go the way of nature. Like the five daily contemplation that the Buddha taught us. This body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. for he has not gone beyond old age, sickness, and death. Then all that we think we own and possess, they were separate from us sooner or later. When conditions cease to be, they were separate. So separation is a reality. Even if they don't separate from you, the moment your breath stops, your identity erased, it's no more yours. You understand? That's why these are the important five daily contemplations that the Buddha constantly reminds the living being. Suffering is everywhere. You don't understand the universal characteristic. Then the other one is about karma. He said, this form of mind, when it comes, is born of its karma, heir to its karma, conditioned and supported by its karma, is what it is because of its karma, every moment, every... So if you understand karma plays such a great role for this coming nature, what must you do? You must have the right view to take care of karma. That's why you must follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good and purify the mind. And how do you avoid all evil? You have to train your mind to be ever mindful, heedful, to see your mental intention. You must understand what constitutes evil. Why did the Buddha say the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion are the roots of all evil? And whenever your mind state has these evil roots, they will make you evil because they are the root of all evil. It's only through all this Dhamma understanding that you can awaken and realize the enlightenment and develop this type of understanding. Then you are not deceived. Then you will come to know there is no permanent unchanging entity within. Where everything is dependent, originating. That's why you will know non-self. This one is not me. It's just a vehicle and a tool, karmically conditioned out for this nature to come, to use. That's why when it's connected and with the wisdom, born of enlightenment, then you will know how to use it. Then this form of mind become beautiful, really beautiful. Then this one transform. When it had insight into the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self, and empty nature, then he realized everything is just the way it is. Truth is, the reality is. You cannot go against nature. Nature is just the way it is. So what happens is, when you start to accept things as they are, when you start to see things as they are, you are not deluded, you are not deceived. And there is no more ignorance or delusion to continue to hold and grasp and try to own things, try to possess things. This is all delusion, foolishness. Then this form of mind, upon awakening and understanding, become very different. No longer like a normal living being anymore. We are how to be selfish. How to have anger and emotion. Because it realized this is not him. Understand? He know you, he know me. So who is angry? Who is unhappy? Who is selfish? Then you realize all these are conditioned arising mental state. Fear is not you. Anger is not you. Selfishness is not you. Unhappiness is not you. All these are sankhara, mental states. When conditioned like that, when you go for retreat meditation, you will be peaceful. You will be more aware, more mindful, more peaceful. Where condition sets it to be like that. That's how you understand. This state of peace, it's not going to be with you forever. It's not going to last because it's dependent on condition. The moment you are on retreat, you go back to square one. At that type of meditation, it's not going to transform you. Understand? That's why you have to meditate until you awaken. Then, forever, you are with that true nature, with that true mind. Constantly aware, mindful, heedful, ever mindful. Like the Buddha said, the constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, they will realize the supreme, what they call enlightenment, which is Nibbana. That is Dhammapada verse 23. you can be in that state of heedfulness, means constantly meditative and ever mindful, you will realize the bond-free enlightenment, supreme bond-free enlightenment, which is Nibbana. The moment you realize, this form of mind that realize is enlightened, but this flow is not you, understand? That's why they will not deludedly cling on to this and say, I am enlightened. No such thing. Meaningless. But this one that is connected is enlightened, yes. And this enlightenment, it will become your spiritual nature. But when you take birth or you come again, even if you choose to come again, the form of mind that come, not connected, it will not have that type of understanding and wisdom. But the karmic nature they will inherit. That one will bring forth the condition according to their vows, according to their aspiration, or whatever understanding they have that they have developed and input into the nature's law through your vows, your aspiration, your adhitana. You remember that week we went through the importance of vows in the cultivation of the spiritual path. Your adhitana, their affirmation, your determination, your vows, your aspiration. That is the perfection that all Sammasambuddha need to perfect. So when you understand all this, during this time when this form of mind have this understanding, you should vow strongly because your merit is different. Your blessings is different. You have that capacity to vow. Line after line, when you have to come or choose to come, this form of mind will have this understanding, this right view with regards to the nature's law that governs life and existence. Karma niyama, chitta niyama, and dhamma niyama. So when you determine strongly, sincerely with faith, it will go into your nature. Then you plant the seed of bodhi to walk this way, to realize this beautiful understanding. That's why you can be different. Then the other one that you need to understand is there are three phases of Dhamma. You remember? Yeah? What are the three phases of Dhamma? Yeah? Phase one is what? Phase one of Dhamma is what? Very good. Pariyatti. What is Pariyatti? Yeah? Learning of the teaching or doctrine. Yeah. So this one initially you learn, yeah? Learning of the teaching. And after you have learned, what must you do? Yeah? What must you do? The second phase is what? This one is not go pati and pati, yeah? The spelling is correct, right? TTI. Is there another T here? Never mind, you go and check the spelling. So, phase two is patipati, means putting the Dhamma into practice or cultivation. Into cultivation. Then after that, what happened? You become enlightened. Or you awaken. Oh, sorry. Before the turn come out, no D. So when you become enlightened, you get to leave the third phase of Dhamma. What is the third phase of Dhamma? Pativeda is what? The third phase of Dhamma. You get to reap the fruition of your hard work. friction of your hard work. Your cultivation. And this is the most beautiful part of your life. You can have this third phase of Dhamma. This is the most beautiful part of your life. So this one is the most beautiful part of your life. Part of your life. This is the period where you can really live life to the fullest. You can experience life to the fullest. You can live the life of enlightenment. Then you can experience all of the great pristine and great beauties and wonders of life. And this is what meditation is all about. This is what enlightenment is all about. Without this understanding, this awakening, your journey in samsara will be full of suffering and misery, because it's clouded by heedlessness, born of delusion, born of ignorance. That's why without this awakening, this enlightenment that the Buddha has taught, it's not easy to understand life. When you cannot understand life, you cannot live life. That's why you suffer without knowing why you suffer. And what is suffering also you cannot understand. Then how can you understand the cause of suffering? Where you don't even know that you are suffering. When you are caught in the midst of samsara, birth and death, and you go through life and become afflicted, so miserable, so full of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, misery, suffering. A lot of people go into depression, suicidal, and yet they don't know they suffer. They live a life of tremendous fear, suffering, misery. A lot of living beings are not as fortunate as most of you. They go through life really miserable, full of karmic negativity. They come here to pay the karmic debts. And sometimes it's like unending. Like everything doesn't seem to go right. Everything is just happening non-stop. That day I learned from my wife one Mandarin word. Shen Hua used to say, Ku Bu Wat Yen. You understand the meaning or not? Kan yen means you suffer until you cannot express it or talk about it. That type of suffering is terrible, miserable. So if you don't want to face all this, if you don't want to come continuously born deluded and heedless, you better wake up. You better buck up. You better determine to cultivate sincerely. Develop the faith, the sadha, the virya, sati, samadhi, and panya. Then now the window is there, the sasana is there. You don't determine. In future, when you want to determine, also no point, where there is no more condition. And with the sasana, you cannot get it. Forget about trying when the sasana is not around. Unless you have your path, there is no way living being can develop their own understanding. With the sasana also, so much or so many of these living beings, they are still deluded. They are still full of ignorance and self-delusion. What more when the sasana is no more around? You can look around you, your civilization, the world, even among the Buddhists. You think most of them have the understanding? They understand what is going on? They know how to develop the cultivation? Not that many, I tell you. Okay, maybe we have more time for Q&A. With this, I thank you for your patience. And sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So I will end my today's talk here, so that you can have more time to ask questions. Okay, while I have a drink.
Any question from the floor?
How come always no question? Everything understood. Brother Tay want to say something, I think. You didn't. I saw you on the thing. Oh. Oh, okay. No wonder no question. That is the good news. Yes. Leslie, yeah. Yeah.
Talking about one who is liberated.
Mm, yes.
Apart from being able to see the three characteristics of nature, the person will be able to see beyond the eight worldly conditions.
Yeah, that is definitely. Yeah, the eight worldly condition is the easiest to transcend. When they can transcend the eight worldly condition, it doesn't mean that they are enlightened, not necessary. Understand not? What are the eight worldly conditions? That's why the word worldly is there, understand not? No. Liberation goes way beyond. Not necessary. I will explain that maybe you understand. You see, this eight worldly condition is something that the Buddha realized the worldly people need. Because these are worldly conditions. It's like the reality of life and existence. But this type of reality is within society. The Buddha wants to remind living beings so that you are not deceived by the world. The worldly condition that arise. The first pair is what? Wherever there is gain, there is loss. So gain and loss is a reality. Maybe you want to teach the gamblers not to get unhappy when you lose your money. And my teacher Achayantra, very good, he got one very good solution for you. He said, before you are born into this world, you come empty. Can I agree or not? Yeah? You don't bring along anything. So whatever you own, or whatever you gain, is from outside, isn't it? You receive it, or you profit from it, or you make it. Then you own. Then let's say you make a mistake, wrong call, wrong decision, or some condition. Then you lost everything that you own. You sure become unhappy, afflicted, miserable. Then you complain, then you blame. Sometimes you got a wife that is not so fortunate, or the husband that is not fortunate. You say, my stupid wife tell me to invest in this. Then if your husband is my stupid husband, ask me to invest in this. But the reality is, you have lost. And how you lose? Through your own delusion. Inexperience, lack of understanding. But my teacher got a very good way of making you feel good. He said, whatever you have lost is what you have gained. You understand? So not so bad, he said. You gain it before you lose it. So why you want to complain? So whatever you have lost is what you have gained. Before you gain, you don't have. Then you lose it because this is what you have gained. But you will be very funny. You know? Whatever you gain means yours. No? You cannot lose. Or no? But some are very happy to lose their wife or their husband. They say, you want or not? You can take. These are people who are deluded, afflicted, miserable. Then the other pair is what? The other pair is what? Happiness and sorrow. Wherever there is happiness, there will be sorrow. The opposite. Why? Why? Because everything is condition arising, dependent originating. When conditioned like that, you will gain. Understand? No? When conditioned no more like that, then you lose. Then when things go your way, you have joy, you have happiness. When things don't go your way, you become unhappy, miserable. So these are worldly conditions. It doesn't mean you will become enlightened. No? Then he said, wherever there is praise, there will be blame. There are people who will praise you. But there are some who is jealous of you. They will blame you. They will say bad things about you. So praise and blame is a worldly phenomenon. Different people with different understanding, they have their own views and opinion. They act differently. So some will praise you. Some will blame you. Like during the Buddha's time, a lot of people are the religious leader who don't like him because all the followers run and join the Buddha. They blame the Buddha. They create the Chincha incident to bring the Buddha down. Then those who like the Buddha, they praise him. So there are times where you will be praised when you are famous, when you are able to contribute to society or maybe did very well. You look at the sports arena, as I say, when Dato Lee Chong Wei, all those people won all the gold medal, the championship, oh, everybody praised them, honestly. But the moment they lost one, or first round get kicked out, but luckily they were so friendly to Dato Lee Chong Wei, they didn't create an issue. Like last time, Miss Boon's time, you can see all the headlines. His character is a bit weird. So people were just blame him and say, he doesn't follow rule, he doesn't want coach, he do on his own, that's why he lost. So these are the human nature. That's why these are worldly conditions, praise and blame. Then the last one is what? Fame and ill fame. When you are famous, you will receive all the fame. Wow, so and so is so good, so generous, so famous, so talented. Then when they discover that you are on drug, that boosts your ability to be the Olympic gold medalist, the moment that thing come out, like Ben Johnson, the runner, so the whole lot of fame gone, ill fame come in. These are worldly conditions. But let's say you can transcend this 8 worldly conditions. You may have some form of understanding or wisdom, but it doesn't mean that you are enlightened. Understand? Yeah. It can slowly maybe lead you to the understanding. Then one day, you can become awakened. Cannot accept the negative. Yeah. You see, human nature is like that, huh? You attach to the good things, you develop aversion or dislike for the negative thing. So everybody want to be happy, everybody want gain, nobody want loss and unhappiness, or very few people. Then everybody want to be praised, you don't like to be like blamed for things. Then you also want to have fame, you don't want to have ill fame. So like, let's say, people tend to attach to all the good things of the eight worldly conditions and they push away. So this is duality. This is why the Buddha said the first mental hindrance and the second mental hindrance, they are a pair, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. Actually, all the eight worldly conditions, whether you like or you dislike, brings about mental hindrance. You cannot free. You will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. Wisdom is about transcending the duality. Neither praise or blame, neither gain or loss. But these are reality. Reality of life and existence. And when you can accept this reality, you will understand. When condition is there for you to gain, you will gain. When condition cease to be, that gain will be gone, lost. And that is the reality. You have to accept it. Then you at peace. Then no more like and dislike. No more mental hindrance. No more delusion. No more views and opinion of how things should be like. Whether people blame me or praise me or accept me, not important. This is not me. No. This is just a form of mind. But society give it a name. Sometimes they can say a lot of negative things about that name. So what? They are just the way they are. People with that type of mind, they will act that way, speak that way, think that way, and do things that way. So you can be at peace with every situation in life, everywhere, under all circumstances. You are the real awakened one. You can only be at peace or happy when things go your way. Then you are not the real awakened one. Or when you are in the deep meditation, experiencing all the fantastic peace, calmness, stillness, special meditative state of jhana and all those things, then you stay in that state, blissful, enjoying all these things. And when you come out, you think you have done very well, or you think you are enlightened, please check. Because these are conditioned states. This arises because there is condition for it to arise. But the real awakening is about understanding, wisdom, that liberates your mind. So that even when your meditation is very lousy, when you can't even get a moment of peace or calmness, you are not affected. At least that being has some form of wisdom or understanding. It doesn't attach, it's accepting as they are. And through the acceptance, sooner or later, they will develop the meditation and the understanding. Then they realize, whether I have it or I don't have it, no different. But the funny thing about enlightenment is, the awakening is, the moment you awaken and enlighten, you are always mindful, heedful, aware, full of wisdom, understanding, then you're always at peace, ever mindful, heedful. That's why you cannot have whether good or bad meditation. But throughout the day, you are with your nature, in the meditative state. You can never be otherwise. It is the wisdom and the understanding that liberates you, that free you. Maybe that part I didn't share with you. How is it like to be enlightened? What are the transformations that take place? That part is very, very unique. Very few people can understand. Of course, they will tell you, like what the Buddha said, that is the unconditioned, beyond words. Beyond thought, beyond words. So I cannot talk. The moment I talk is not that real thing, which is the truth. But then, it's like you didn't tell me anything. The unconditioned means what? They cannot tell you. Unconditioned means no condition. Did you make any sense? You just use another word, isn't it? The unconditioned, the meaning is very deep. It's not like our existential world, where everything that arises, there are causes and conditions dependent on originating. There is so much of this phenomenal world. This is the mind you will understand. That's why the Buddha said, our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. The twin verse. Where mind arises, everything comes to be. The phenomenal world is like that. Condition arising. Mind being adi. But the unconditioned world, the supramundane world, there is no word and no name. Where there is no mind involved. Everything sees. Even the pure awareness sees. Then that realization of Nibbana sets in. There is no one to realize. There is nothing inside there. That's why they call it Mahayana. Pu sen pu mie. No arising or no birth. No cessation. No death. What is that state? How can you understand? There is no birth and no death, no arising and no ceasing. Nothing to talk about. Then sometimes you are deluded and you say, well, but till like that, I don't want to. That type of Nibbana, so boring. Nothing inside there. No? I want eternal heaven. No? I want how many generations of virgin. No? That type of enlightenment, the Buddha never teach. Cannot give you. You have to go to other religions to get that. You understand? Yes, the unconditioned is not a state that you can understand. But what I can share with you is the transformation is very beautiful. As you go through, you transform from the heedless way of living life to a very heedful way of living life. Then you will come to understand that it is the spiritual faculty that you need. Without the spiritual faculty, the hindrance will be there and you will be heedless. That's why your focus is on the spiritual faculty. When you have developed the spiritual faculties, the spiritual faculty will transform you and prevent the five hindrances from arising. Then when you have the spiritual faculty, you are definitely in the meditative state. What are the spiritual faculty? No mental hindrance. Nothing to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. And you have all the spiritual faculty which are the meditative state. You have faith. That's why you have very strong, composed and calm mind because of the faith. Then you have virya, which is the spiritual zeal and tenacity to understand things, to walk the path of Dhamma, to cultivate this. Then you are always in sati, mindful, ever mindful. No thought, nothing. Most of the time, your mind does not dwell. Specific phenomenal awareness. It does perceive, but it does not dwell. Then when this sati develop into samadhi, sati and samadhi allow you to constantly see things as they are and understand things more and more beautifully. That's how you can develop the wisdom, the understanding. Then after that, there's a lot more things that happen and transform. Maybe some of you, when you cultivate until that point, then I will elaborate on it. Otherwise, you may copy all these things you already got it. Then no point. It defeats the purpose. Because it involves the transformation of consciousness in your brain too, in your heart. A lot of things. That's why I used to tell a lot of Dhamma friends, not until there is condition, there are so much more understanding that this nature can share. But the condition is just not there. It just cannot share. It just don't come out. That's why I hope people ask questions and there's condition that it can come out. Actually, the title is supposed to bring forth the condition for you. That's why I want to speak on this because at least this is recorded. And when this form of mind is no more, at least you have this thing to fall back to. So, what this nature understands, because it has gone through all this, in the past and even this life, you must have the understanding that if there is condition, you have to ask. Otherwise, this will be gone, wasted. Then no more form and mind, nothing come out. And while the form and mind still exists, this is the condition for you to ask. That's why I don't like paisei others. You stand to lose. What you do If you create condition, it's not only for you, for the future generation, for the non-humans and all those things. That's why this is very important. Yeah. And this nature got nothing. It just, when there is condition, it will accord and flow, and it will share. But when there is no condition, nothing happens. But the last 2-3 years has been beautiful. That's why now you look at all the recording, all the sharing. It's so different now. It's not to say the understanding has become different. No. Don't get it wrong. The understanding is all the while from 1989 until the same. Until now, it's the same. No change. But there is no condition. That's why all those things cannot come out. But recently, there are some beautiful conditions last few years. That's why you can come out. That's why Chu Yi also used to say, Brother, how come your clang talk all so different? No? You must thank Brother Gan. He got good question. So all this, they are part of nature. Condition arising. When there is condition, this nature will speak, will share. And you don't have to understand now. Because a lot of things I don't expect you to understand now. You have to develop the cultivation. Then later on when you understand, you have a lot of joy, a lot of gratitude, and a lot of expression of thanks. Just like what happened to my nature. After I heard from my teacher, my guide, this nature rejoiced. Then as it cultivates, as it develops the understanding, then later on when it connects, then it looks back. I got so much joy because this nature understands how beautiful those things are. But everyone that taught me and shared with me is different. They have their understanding which is different. But this nature very funny. It can come and receive all the important ones from them. Then when it comes, it's like how this nature, this life or in the past has been giving, the sharing. But this is the way this nature give and share. You understand? That's why when it comes, it also receives equally fast, equally penetrative. That's why I don't need to learn one. And my teacher never really teach me anything. They just speak to me. Finish. Then this nature, when it hear truth, it understand. Sometimes the teacher also haven't penetrated deep enough. But for the teacher to come out with that type of saying, they already have some form of understanding. Yeah. But the moment this nature hear truth and receive, it inherit back. Then it understand and it unfold, it become different again. That's why I realize I can relate the teaching back to life. And I can link all the teaching back to life so that you can comprehend and understand. They may appear very different. Words are different. Even the different religion appear like very different teaching. You look at Jai Krishnamurti's teaching. It's like so different. The Buddhists will say he is a crazy guy. Everything he says is against the Buddha. You know why? He say wherever there is effort, there is no meditation. Then they go and quote, no, noble eightfold path got 4 right effort. No, you say no effort. Oh, see? People don't understand what is thought-based meditation and what is awareness. That's why they say he is wrong, the Buddha is right. Because the Buddha is like, I used to say what? The highest authority. So when you quote the Buddha say how to challenge the authority, the highest in Buddhism. But it's not what the Buddha say. It's quoting what the Buddha say without understanding. When the Buddha taught the 4 right efforts, it was meant for the talk. That's why the first right effort is what? Right effort to? Right effort to do what? Abandon the wrong thought that has arisen. Understand? It's for the thought. That's why when they come to meditation, it's mindfulness, awareness. He where could say use effort some more? He where could ask you to note and look for it? No. He where could say put in effort to note? No. He just say relax, aware, silent, the third way. Then trace the origination factor through the silent mind. The fourth right effort is for the thought. Right effort to abandon the thought that has arisen. Then right effort to prevent the thought from arising, the wrong thought. Then right effort to cultivate right thought. And this one you need to use effort. Because you have to train it. You have to develop it. So this one you use effort. But when it comes to meditation, you have to be mindful, aware, to understand, to see clearly. Not with the physical eye, with your essence of mind, with that nature. To understand the truth and the reality that is beyond thought, beyond mind. That's why it's very different. Mm-hmm. Then all the word Krishnamurti used, where got Dhamma word on? Completely without Dhamma word on. He somehow say any type of discipline is not meditation. Wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. Well, that one very profound. You understand? Huh? Who is the meditator? Your thought. That's why the egoic mind that meditates is the thought. Wherever there is a thought, there is no meditation. Real meditation is awareness. Silent. None of all this creation. Okay, we better end. 10:15. Huh? Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah.
Sadhu, Brother Teo. I wonder if I can just offer my thoughts about the four right effort. I think the mere awareness, sati, itself is the effort. So as you go along, and eventually you'll come to understand that in emptiness, even the Eightfold Path doesn't exist. Okay. Right? Because the Eightfold Path is actually a mundane Eightfold Path, and because we living beings are not enlightened yet, we need to use our thinking faculties through reasoning, through analysis, all those, and that's why we say that there is this Eightfold Path. So the effort is sati, just being aware. When it is continuously, then you see phenomena. Is that correct?
Let me answer, please, because she asked. Otherwise, I will not answer. You see, awareness, there is no thought behind. It's just silent. The moment you are without thought, it's aware. Effort means what? Somebody is trying to do something. That's why I make effort to do something, to meditate, to be awakened. That is where the delusion is. Wherever there is effort, there is a monk who defined mindfulness as four right effort in America. Where he keep on repeating the 6 R. Release, relax. Recognize, release, relax. Then I think is the fifth one is return, re-smile and return. Then the last one is repeat. So he said all this doing, the 6 R, which is technique and method, is right effort. And say this is mindfulness to him. Okay? But you look at what effort is. Effort means what? There is somebody who puts in effort to do something. And who is that person? That person is the thought. Understand not? There is a mind that has the desire to do something. That's why there is an effort to meditate, to realize, to understand. Whatever you do, there is the subtle mind, the egoic mind. The real meditation, there is no effort. That's why Krishnamurti says, wherever there is effort, there is no meditation. Wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. Awareness is sati, awareness before the knowing. And sati is very simple. When you are without thought, means your mind is not preoccupied with the thinking, not lost in thought. You can either be with the moment in awareness without thought, or you are lost in thought and preoccupied with the thought. When you are creating effort within the moment, you are arising a thought that want to do, that want to see, that want to understand. So with the knowledge, you are operating. And that is not sati. Sati is just silent. Through that silent, it understands everything. It's not a being. That awareness can be aware of the thought process, the aggregates of mind. Because the awareness is not dependent originating. The awareness is when the mundane mind didn't arise, then it manifests. But that is the true mind. Okay? I hope you all can understand, because this is very difficult. When people are so conditioned to meditate with a thought, with a mind, with a meditator in mind, with an effort in mind, that's why it's so difficult to understand. And when you cannot understand, you meditate, it's very difficult for you to progress. That's why I say, don't try to know when you are meditating. Don't try to do anything. Just silent, relax. Then what happens? Your original state of mind is already the true mind. Stillness. Aware. Without thought. Nothing. The perfect tranquility, stillness. Why can't you realize that nature? Because you are too busy meditating. Thinking. Arising the thought. And creating so many things around it. That's why you can never meditate. Don't try to don't miss one. Don't arise any thought. How do you know? You dwell, you perceive, you create thinking, you create idea, you create Dhamma knowledge. You create the concept that I must strive on with heedfulness. I must meditate. The advice to the monk is different. Strive on with heedfulness means develop that heedfulness. He never asks you to put effort to cultivate heedfulness. Heedfulness cannot be cultivated. Heedfulness is whether you understand or you don't understand. When you understand, you know how to be heedful. When you don't understand, you don't do all the noting, the focusing, the concentrating, the doing, thinking that that is cultivating mindfulness. How can mindfulness be cultivated? It's like you teach a fish how to swim. The fish born already know how to swim. You are born with this nature, no? You are already aware before you come, no? You have to learn how to be mindful. To be aware. This is crazy, isn't it? That nature already aware. But because it's clouded by the thought, you thought you are the thought, that's why you want to suppress the thought, control the thought, and make it doesn't move, then only you can be peaceful. But that is not awareness. That is a conditioned mind. Understand? Help in energy field, one-pointedness. That's why the whole of meditation is not what you think. You must try it. Silent. Don't do anything. Then all this, like the Buddha say, dependent originating, condition arising, like your fear, your doubt, your whatever mind state, they are not real. They are not you. They are dependent originating through your wrong view, through your stirring of mind. But if you can accept them for what they are and don't introduce any more thought energy, they will dissipate, they will cease to be. They will return to the original state. That's why by being silent, like the Buddha said, the third way, that condition arising state of anger and fear or whatever, they will just cease. Then you realize, hey, I don't have to do anything. This is the original state of mind. It was really there. When there is no delusion, when there is no heedlessness, when there is no hindrance. That is the understanding. That's why I say stage one, pariyati, understand it clearly. Then when you do, the understanding will help you because it is understanding that free you, not all the method, technique, concept, and idea of meditation. That is all created by thought, delusion. Okay? You should thank Brother Dave for giving the condition to explain this so clearly. Thank you so much. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Otherwise, there is no condition. That's why I say you need condition. You have to say something. Don't worry about right and wrong. We are not here to deal with right and wrong. You remember the three conditions? It's sharing. It's not one-way traffic. Then no right, no wrong. Whatever that can help you, take, use, progress. That's it. Then we avoid misunderstanding. Right and wrong is for the deluded one, the foolish one, to argue. Why do you want to be right? Right and wrong is relative. Right according to who, you never ask. That's why the reality is just a reality. No right, no wrong. When you are like that, you will think like that. You will act like that. You will meditate like that. But when you understand, completely different. Okay? Okay, sadhu, Arija. Thank you so much.
Sadhu, I think maybe on another occasion, probably Brother Teo will elaborate more on the understanding, right understanding of there is no right and there is no wrong. Okay. Okay, in appreciation, we'd like to extend to you a token of appreciation, Brother Teo. Gan. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Come, boy. This is for you. Yeah, he, Mimi and the son, they drove us here. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I donate back to Tiratana.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
So
that's why we should rejoice. Yeah,
to end this session, let us now share merits with Devas and transfer merits to our departed relatives.
We did it at the Tuesday class, so today we do it again where she is from Klang. Huh? And I met her before at Susan's house, Dana, I remember. Yeah, sadhu. See, like the Buddha said, these are realities of life and existence. Whatever that is of the condition to arise is of the condition to cease. So what has been born into this world has come to pass because conditions cease to be. No amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. This is a very powerful understanding. That's why we have to accept all this reality. But it doesn't mean that we don't have love, we don't have compassion. But all this has to be done with understanding. Like this one, there is condition. Because at least she is not a constant Kayanamita, but she has been a Kayanamita before because she attended our house dana function. And I met her. And according to Susan, they were quite close. She used to help your family. You wrote in the WhatsApp, her family used to help your family or what? Who was it that wrote in the WhatsApp? I remember it's you, not you. Somebody wrote when they sent all those condolences message. But did you really know her quite well? Not really. But that day she was there at your house, Dana came and helped. There were a few times, I remember, So because of that condition and the affinity, that's why I was keen because there was condition, then we transfer and share merits. But I don't want people to misunderstand, please. Because a lot of people last time, at one time, I remember, they saw people, my so-and-so passed away, but still can we send merits? Then after that, one of the Kayanamitas said, my friend's friend from Singapore, the parent just died, can you also send me? We are not like the Chai Kong or Ta Chai. Please, must have understanding. I hope you all can understand. But when there is condition, no problem. All these are very beautiful, very wholesome. That's why today we can invoke the causes and condition for our sisters, also Susan. Susan what? Oh, Chong, not there. Susan Chong, yeah. So we would like to recall to mind all of our wholesomeness that we have developed through our today's Dhamma sharing, yeah, and your rejoicing, and your listening to the Dhamma, straightening your view, your joy, and whatever wholesomeness that you have developed. Then also the generosity expressed by Tiratana Society, then we offer it to Brother Chua's son, Chua Chong Lim, who provide transport for me. Then we rejoice in his generosity to offer back to the center all this. Shall we all rejoice in the wholesomeness? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And by the power of whatever wholesomeness that we have developed together collectively as a whole tonight, we would like to express whatever causes and condition that is possible for it to help our recently deceased sister Susan Chong, who has recently passed away. We hope it will help her fulfill her good and noble wishes soon as possible. Then if possible, may it also arise the causes and conditions for her to have the good life and the good condition to receive the Buddha Dhamma in whatever realm of existence she may be. Then we wish her all the best from now onward. Then we should rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we also delegate this wholesomeness and merits and share them with the devas. Akka satta cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana. Itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Do pay respect to Sakyamuni Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we shall end our session.
Brothers and sisters, before you go back, please help yourself to some refreshments outside.